Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, Episode 61, The Bio-Cyborg Challenge. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
Hey, Chris.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. We are, of course, back once again to talk about the latest goings-on in the world of Nintendo. We're going to have some news to talk about, and then the Super Nintendo Entertainment System just had its 25th anniversary a couple days ago as we're recording this. You know, last week we did our first half of the best 25 Super NES games ever released. We went numbers 25 through 11, and so this week our big topic is going to be continuing that list. We're going to do numbers 1 through 10,
mm-hmm.
our top 10 Super NES games ever released. But before we do that, let's kick it off with a little bit of news. I suppose one of the biggest things going on right now in the world of Nintendo is the release of a new game. We got the release of Metroid Prime Federation Force last Friday. Have you had a chance to play it yet?
No, I haven't. I'm actually looking forward to it because it's not all that bad, I heard.
Well, you know, I haven't had a chance to play it very much myself either. I played it for like literally a minute or two. I went through like the first room and unlocked a door, and that was all I had a chance to play. So hopefully in a later episode, we'll both get to play it. We'll be able to give some real hands-on impressions. But I have been paying attention to the reviews, and right now it's got a 69 on Metacritic and a 70% on game rankings. So it's kind of got some mixed reviews there, but certainly doesn't seem to be the disaster that a lot of people were expecting.
Yeah. I think, obviously, the biggest issue was that it was called Metroid. And so it was unfairly judged, I believe, before it came out.
Hopefully we'll be able to play it more extensively and have some hands-on impressions in an episode or two. But for now, we'll just have to be content, reading other people's impressions online. Now, the other big thing that happened regarding Nintendo recently was at the Olympic closing ceremony. Did you see this?
I didn't see it live. I saw it on the internet, like almost everyone
else.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So for people who didn't see it, do you want to explain what happened?
I can't even. It's hard. I didn't know this, but during the Olympics closing ceremonies, there's a handoff to the next country that's going to host the Olympics. And
yeah, the next one is Tokyo, Japan,
that's
in
right.
2020.
So it cuts to a video that says warming up, and it's some shots of Tokyo, some sports people, sports things like swimmers and wrestlers. And then it starts showing other culture of Japan, and there's Pac-Man, and there's Doraemon, which is that blue cat thing. And then there's anime character. And then there's Hello Kitty. And then...
Right, then comes the important part.
Yeah, and then Mario and Doraemon are standing next to a green warp pipe, and Mario like drills down through the pipe, and then they cut to the stadium.
Well, there was this really long, extensive scene of like Mario going through the pipe
and
all this stuff.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, suddenly Mario is traveling, and then, lo and behold, it cuts back to the closing ceremony at the Olympics, and out of this pipe structure, who do we see?
The Prime Minister of Japan popping out of a warp pipe wearing a Mario costume.
Yeah, he's totally dressed like Mario, and he immediately tears it off and reveals he's not the real Mario. It's actually the Prime Minister. And yeah, that was just nuts.
It was weird and cool.
Well, it's weird, it's cool, but for me, it's like it really sort of cements Mario and Nintendo as like the biggest thing going for Japan right now. It's like, oh, it's not just some little niche thing. This is like a character and a brand that everybody in the world knows, and that's why it's here being shown at the biggest sporting event in the world, pretty much.
Yeah, he's their Mickey Mouse. He's probably their biggest cultural export.
Yeah, these days, I think that's probably pretty fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was pretty amazing to see. Pretty darn cool.
That was really neat.
Yeah, so it's not just a licensing fee and a tie-in with Sonic. The Olympics are bringing Mario in for other purposes as well. Pretty darn cool. I know there have been like a lot of cases of the Olympics being like trying to take these videos down as much as possible, but if you get a chance, look it up, check it out, see it. It's pretty cool. Now, speaking of other cool things going on in Japan, we got some official word about an NX game from the folks at Square Enix. They have finally officially confirmed that Dragon Quest XI is coming to NX.
Okay. To the US version of this platform.
No. Oh, still no Pete's confirmation sake. For the US. So, we know they're getting Dragon Quest X. And now, I mean, before, when they talked about Dragon Quest XI, when it was first unveiled, they kind of said something about it being on NX, and they backpedaled right away. And I think everybody knew that it's totally coming to NX. But now it's finally official, it's reconfirmed. And, you know, it's up to us, I guess, to make sure that it does come out here. You know, Dragon Quest VII is coming out just next month, I believe. Dragon Quest VIII, I think, comes out early next year. So if we want Dragon Quest XI to be here, I guess it's up to us hardcore players to, you know, pick up those games and be like, yes, this has to come out over here. Do it, Square Enix. Do it, Nintendo. Mm-hmm. If it does come out, will you be getting it?
I don't think so. I'm not playing. I haven't played any Dragon Quest games except for the ones on the NES. So yeah.
Well, I can kind of relate. I keep buying them and I keep playing them a little bit, but it's really hard to finish them because they're pretty lengthy. They're mm-hmm. pretty hardcore. And, you know, to be honest, I'm not sure if I'd rather get the NX version or the 3DS version, because the 3DS version has both a 2D mode and a 3D mode, and that's pretty darn cool. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, it's cool to know another thing totally confirmed for NX in one territory or another. And, you know, they'll probably want lots of stuff to come out, you know, for the system's debut, you know, no matter what country it's in. Yeah. So I'm hopeful it'll come out here.
Me too. More games.
The 3DS better. Version. The 3DS version is still going to be the most popular version worldwide, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but it's still pretty cool.
Did we ever get that special edition 3DS, or was that Japan only? The Dragon Quest one. The one with the slime on it.
I don't remember, but if I had to guess, I'd say probably
yeah,
it was
we
Japan
probably didn't
only.
Get it, did we?
Because if it's Dragon Quest, that's usually the answer. Still, I'm keeping my fingers crossed for this one. And speaking of cool Nintendo things that are so far only announced for overseas, there are a few more Amiibo bundles.
Amiibo!
Specifically, we found out that there are two Fire Emblem Fates bundles, one with Marth and one with Ike. And then there's a Smash Brothers Amiibo bundle with Samus. And these are confirmed for Europe and Australia and you know, probably some other territories. Nothing for the U.S. yet, and I don't know if they were announced for Japan. But for our friends overseas, that's kind of cool. Do you have any interest in these?
So was Marth the one that was like not being reprinted, and then everybody's like, where's Marth? I can't get Marth.
No,
I need to spend...
no, actually.
Oh, there was
they
a million Marths?
They did reprint Marth. Okay. Well, he was hard to find for a while, but then they got like a ton of them at Best Buy, and he was pretty easy to find. Okay. That's kind of the ironic thing about this, is that the two Fire Emblem characters that are really hard to get are Robin and Lucina. Apparently, Lucina is getting a reprint, so you know we think she's coming in one way or another. But that's the weird thing. They could have done these bundles with Robin and Lucina. Be like, oh, we want to sell more copies of the games? Okay, we'll put them with the most hard-to-find amiibo out there.
Yeah.
And that would have made so much sense. But no, they're doing it with the other characters instead. So, you know, it's not North America. Maybe someone in North America will be like, oh, this is what we should do to sell more copies of Fire Emblem Fates. You know, I don't know why. It's like they just have some big hate on for these two characters and don't seem to want to make them available.
Maybe they lost the mold.
Maybe. Like I said, we are supposed to be getting a Lucina reprint, but Robin is like going to be the hardest amiibo to find of all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, personally, I already have the games, I already have the amiibo, and of course, as I keep saying, this is only overseas right now, but, you know, I'm glad to see it happening.
In other amiibo news, I saw on Twitter you're taking pictures of some amiibo on clearance. Can you tell me about that?
Well, I was out at Target yesterday, and I noticed that the new Splatoon 3-pack was already, you know, marked as half off on clearance.
Yeah, so what's the story about that? What do you think?
Well, I don't know anything about a story. I mean, I've got to believe that those Splatoon amiibo are selling better than the Animal Crossing ones that they've had for such a long time.
I know. Maybe they're clearing space for more Animal Crossing.
I doubt that's the case. But the takeaway is these amiibo are pretty cool. And if you're a fan, you know, keep an eye out for these. Head out to Target, see if you can get these for half off if you haven't already got them. I guess they are just repaints mm-hmm. of existing characters, yeah. So maybe they did sell astronomically bad for that reason. It's the only time that Nintendo has released amiibos that were straight-up repaints, except for, you know, like the Gold Mario and mm-hmm. Silver Mario,
yeah.
And, you know, really hard-to-find stuff like that. I think it's pretty cool that you can get these fairly desirable amiibo for pretty cheap. So that is my takeaway. Go out, get yourself a good deal if you don't have them already. Hopefully it doesn't mean, you know, bad things for amiibo as a whole.
Yeah.
It's always nice to get a good deal. Another interesting bit of Nintendo news that came up last week, but we sort of didn't talk about because we were so dedicated to Super Nintendo stuff, is that the highly anticipated Wii U version of Axiom Verge now has a release date. It is coming out on September 1st. So that's just a little bit more than a week away. I played the PlayStation version, and so far it's a really good game. And supposedly, the Wii U version might be the best one yet.
Yeah.
Have you had a chance to play it in any form yet?
I haven't. The only familiarity I have with it is because I had seen a speedrun of it, and it looks like it's a game made for people who like do speedruns. So, yeah, I think it looks really cool.
Well, there is a speedrun mode, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a speedrun mode with a timer, which is really neat. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's a great idea. I think that's an awesome just embracing of the community and... Yeah, I'm excited for this game. It looks really, really
But you don't
really
have to play it that way.
No, you don't.
You can't play it as just a traditional exploration-heavy Metroid-type game. Yep. You can take as much time as you want, and that's how I'm probably going to play it. I'm like whatever the opposite of a speedrunner is. But yeah, it's coming soon, so I'm looking forward to that. And then, just sort of out of nowhere, another fairly high-profile indie game got a Wii U release as well. In fact, the game is already out. It was announced. It came out. It's on the eShop right now. It is called Armacrog. Are you familiar with this title?
I had seen screenshots of it, but no, I'm not really.
I don't know a whole lot about it myself, but I do know that it is a claymation-based point-and-click adventure game from some of the folks that are responsible for The Neverhood. Doug Tenapel, the guy who did Earthworm Jim and I think Skull Monkeys and stuff. I think this is his creation. I think the game was given life on Kickstarter, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
And it came out as a computer game a while back, but I didn't ever expect it would come out on Wii U. But poof, there you go. It's there. It's only like $8 or $9, I think. And, you know, I can't say anything about the quality of it. I haven't played it at all. But given the opportunity, I would like to, because it certainly has a very, very interesting visual hook, given that it's all this stop-motion claymation stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It does look a lot like Neverhood.
Yeah, so that's certainly one to keep an eye on.
So only how much is that one? That's only $10?
Less than $10.
Oh, that's...
I checked the eShop yesterday. It was like $8, maybe $9. I can't remember exactly, but yeah.
That's great, because it's like $25 on Steam, so that's a deal.
Oh, wow. Very nice. Well, that's good, because I need to save my money, because I am planning to buy some pretty cool-looking Legend of Zelda goods in the near future. There's been a few pretty neat-looking items that were recently announced, one of which is a new art book from the folks at Dark Horse.
Yeah, this book looks a lot like the that other book they released, the green one.
Well, they did the Hyrule Historia one.
Hyrule Historia.
That must be what you're talking about. And this is a new one called The Legend of Zelda Art and Artifacts.
Mm-hmm. This one's red.
And this one, well, it's a lot more of a straight-up art book from what I gather. I mean, apparently there are going to be interviews and stuff as well, but it's much more of an art book than the other one was. And we actually talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago because... The Japanese version is coming out in Japan later this month. And at that time, I had no idea it was coming to the U.S., no idea that it was going to have this art and artifact subtitle to it. But it's the same book that's hitting Japan any day now. And yeah, it's already licensed for the U.S., and I am really looking forward to it. How about you?
I am. I have to admit, I haven't picked up Hyrule Historia yet, which I feel kind of ashamed about, because I do love...
You should get that. You can grab it on Amazon for a pretty decent price.
Maybe holding out was a good idea. Maybe there will be a box set of these two.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. But yeah, there should be lots of cool stuff in there. There's some sample pages out there showing lots of artwork from all the way back to the classic... And yes, Legend of Zelda and Twilight Princess. And they say there's even going to be Breath of the Wild content in there. And right now they're saying it's coming out on February 21st, 2017. And you can go on Amazon and pre-order this as well. I've already done so.
Yeah, it's a good price. $24 on Amazon.
And then if that's not enough Zelda reading material for you, The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess manga has officially been announced for the United States. It seemed very likely it was coming out, but now it is confirmed that Volume 1 is coming out in March 2017 from Tokyopop.
Are you going to get this?
Oh yeah, definitely. I have bought all of the Zelda manga that's come out so far. Most of it has been pretty darn good, and I don't expect this to be any different. So yeah, in fact, I've already pre-ordered this one on Amazon as well.
So how closely does it stick to the story in the game?
Well, it really depends on which game and which manga you're talking about. Sometimes they take a lot of liberties, introduce a lot of extra characters. Sometimes they stay, you know, pretty darn true to the game. Off the top of my head, you know, I find it a little hard to remember. I would say like the Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons probably took a lot of liberties, added a lot of extra characters. But something like Ocarina of Time, I think, was fairly faithful. Any way you look at it, all the stuff has been pretty darn good. So, you know, I'm not hesitating at all. Like I said, I already got it. I'm fairly confident it's going to be good stuff.
Hopefully Link doesn't spend half the manga as a wolf.
Well, he might. The third bit of Legend of Zelda merchandise is a new statue from First Four Figures. This one is Link on the King of Red Lions from The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker. You had a chance to take a look at this?
These First Four Figures, I almost don't want to look at them because I know how expensive they can be, and I don't want to fall in love with any of them because I know they're, and usually with these, there's not just the regular edition. There's usually some sort of special edition that either lights up or is a different colorway that looks even cooler. Please tell me that's the case with this.
That is indeed what's happening with this one. There is a regular version.
Okay.
And as you implied, it's pretty darn pricey. It is $449.
Ooh.
And then there's the exclusive version, which has lights in the water that's supposed to give it like a flowing water effect. And that one's only a little bit more at $479.
So there's no choice there. I mean, if you're going to spend that much, you should just go ahead and, you know, get the good one. I mean, not good one, but get the one that's got like all the features.
Yeah, I would think so too. For only $30 more, you might as well. And if you're looking at the pictures, then you know that it's a pretty darn authentic recreation of Link from Wind Waker. That, of course, is, you know, the fairly popular Toon Link design. And, you know, it's his red boat, you know, warning, spoiler incoming, that ends up, you learn, is the King of Red Lions. Mm-hmm. It's actually, you know, the King of Hyrule, you know, talking telepathically to Link through all this. One thing that might not be clear, though, is how big this thing is. It's supposedly 25 inches tall from the base to the top of the sail. So more than 2 freaking feet tall.
Oh, no. Oh, where are you going to put this?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a little out of my price range, I think, and probably too big for me to put in my apartment anyway. So it's pretty darn cool, but I don't think I'll be getting this one.
Yeah,
I'm afraid.
You know you're in trouble when on the webpage they have like an installment plan for buying these things. Yeah.
That's right, they
Ooh.
Do. But yeah, it'll be nice to get. It's certainly a nice piece of Zelda sculpture, that's for sure.
I like it better than that Darunia one.
Yeah, not a big fan of Darunia, huh? That's from Ocarina of Time, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's hardly a fair comparison. I mean, he's a big Goron rock dude. And then we've got, you know, Link, the hero, in his most iconic pose on the King of Red Lions. So I don't know if that's really fair.
I guess
it's
not a fair comparison.
He's like a second-tier character compared to the hero of Winds. Is that what he's called in this game? Anyway, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Go
take out a loan so you can buy one.
I think it's a cool statue. Yeah, I think you need to go in on it with some friends, and then you each trade off every month to have it in your house.
Would you get it if you could afford it and had the space?
Okay, so I'll tell you, I kind of like $200 like this statue, and that's about as much as I feel comfortable paying for something like that.
I see. Yeah, I did go all in on the Twilight Princess statue, the one of Link on the horse. Mm-hmm. And I think that one looks pretty great, but I doubt I'm ever going to spend that kind of money ever again.
Yeah, I would have to sell something to buy that. So, I could justify it if I sold some other toys, but I wouldn't like drain my bank account for that.
Yeah, probably a good idea. Well, I think that takes care of the news portion of this week's episode. Why don't we take a little intermission, and then when we come back, we will continue our countdown of the top 25 Super NES games of all time. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss our big topic this week, which is the second half of our countdown of the top 25 Super NES games of all time. The 25th anniversary of Nintendo's 16-bit juggernaut was just yesterday as we record this, the 23rd of August. That's when the system turned 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So in celebration, we are going to continue our countdown. Before I do that, though, Scott.
Yes.
I have a bit of a bone to pick with you about
Bring it.
What happened last week.
What happened last week?
Now, last week on the show, when we were discussing this stuff, mm-hmm. you claimed that you thought 25 games was scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Well,
scraping the bottom of the barrel.
I'm saying...
Man, I could probably
Some
come
of these...
up with 50 games
okay.
that would
really?
Still be
really?
Amazing. Yeah.
I don't think I
you
would...
Know, Yesterday, I was trying to put together like this little screenshot mm-hmm. collage mm-hmm. that I tweeted out on both my and the Power Pros Twitter account. As I was doing this, it was like, man, there are just so many games I want to include on here. It's so hard to narrow it down to just a handful.
I think where that came from was I don't know anybody who has played every SNES game. And
sure.
You couldn't have possibly owned, I don't even think there are... I don't know any kid who owned 25 games. So I was really going from the games I owned and then the games I came to later on, either by buying them on eBay because I've heard they were great, or you know, seeing them on YouTube or mm-hmm. on Virtual Console. And then even on Virtual Console, I probably bought about 30 SNES games on Virtual Console over the years. So that's where that came from. I totally understand there are way more games out there. And if I were to do a comprehensive list, I should probably be playing every game on the system. I just haven't done it. So that's where that came from. But yeah, okay. I agree. There are far more than 25 good games on the SNES. And
so to clarify,
I know there are shoot 'em ups out there that I've never even played on the SNES. There are puzzle games that I just completely forgot about.
Yeah, I mean, there's games that I haven't played too. There's certainly no question about that. Mm-hmm. And that was the nice thing about, you know, being able to each come up with our own list, is that way I would be able to have games on there that you hadn't played, and you had games on there that I hadn't played. Like, you know, my Kirby knowledge on the Super NES is kind of pathetic, so mm-hmm. I was glad you were able to have those on. But, yeah, so to clarify, you were scraping the bottom of Scott's
list. That's right, Scott's list of
okay.
games. Scott's,
All right.
Scott's personal... SNES experience.
Well, regardless, I know you've still played a ton of good Super NES games, and I know you're going to have a lot of cool stuff to talk about on our big topic today. So why don't we jump into it? And since I started last week, why don't you start this week with your number 10 Super NES game?
Okay. This game was, I think, somewhere in your top 20. Super Punch-Out, which I really enjoy. I did not own this game as a young man. I mm-hmm. really love the Punch-Out series. I think Super Punch-Out is one of the best in the series. And it's
Where would you rank it? I mean, there's only been three
question.
Of them on home systems so far.
Yeah.
Plus the two arcade games.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to say I like it in the number two spot underneath Mike Tyson's Punch Out. I think I like it better than We Punch Out, which I guess was just called Punch Out.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there. I think it's the second best one, but you know, it's pretty close. It is pretty close to Mike Tyson's Punch. I think Mike Tyson's Punch just kind of has the edge because of, you know, being the first one, having all that nostalgia value in there for it.
It's criminal that we don't have Mike Tyson's Punch Out on Virtual Console.
Yeah.
I know Mike Tyson was a criminal, and that's why that's why we don't have it. But I would, and also I know they just don't want to pay him royalties anymore on the game title. But man,
right.
Man.
So when it comes to Super Punch Out, though, do you have any favorite opponents or anything like that?
I don't. Dragon Chan maybe, or
The guy who kicks you in the face.
Yeah, I think Canadian Bear Hugger. He's very easy.
Well, he's kind of hard if you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Duck. Not the quacking kind either.
Yeah.
He should hit you with a moose, because he's Canadian. He should like club you with a moose.
I gotta say, it's probably the hardest one. I think it's harder than Mike Tyson's Punch Out, believe it or not. I know Mike Tyson is insanely hard. He is beatable. I feel like Super Punch Out, it's not, their tells aren't as obvious to me, but maybe I'm just an old man with terrible reflexes. But I like Bald Bull's return in Super Punch-Out.
Yeah,
I
Bald Bull's great. A classic.
I think it's a great game.
I've always liked Bob Charlie. He's always a fun one to punch in the face for a while. Yeah, definitely an excellent, worthy top 10 choice. I called it my number 14 game last week, but it's absolutely spectacular. Great one, available on all the virtual console options. Excellent, excellent game.
Yeah.
On to my number 10, then. I chose Super Street Fighter 2.
All right.
The new challengers. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some people might think, if I'm going to pick a Street Fighter game, why would I go with Super Street Fighter 2 instead of the original or instead of Street Fighter 2 Turbo? I think Street Fighter 2 Turbo is a lot of people's favorite. But for me, I just really enjoyed having those additional new characters in there. I'm a big fan of Cammy. She was always one of my favorite characters to play as. Mm-hmm. The other characters, T-Hawk and DJ and Fei Long, were no slouches either. And of course, everybody else got enhancements and new stuff going on like that. So just having those additional characters in there made a world of difference as far as I'm concerned. Great new backgrounds, great new music. I guess, the sound was a little weaker compared to Street Fighter 2 and Street Fighter 2 Turbo, but I can overlook that just because the basic fighting was so darn good. I mean, even today, I think that Street Fighter is still pretty much the best 2D fighting series out there.
All right. I think it's a great game. I love Street Fighter 2. It was one of my favorite arcade games growing up. I put so many quarters into it.
All right, moving on then to number 9. What do you got?
I have Yoshi's Island.
Ah, Yoshi's Island.
Yeah.
Excellent game.
It is, and I think a huge departure for the Super Mario series. So,
well, that was the weird thing about it, was that they marketed it in the U.S. as Super Mario World 2.
That's right.
And it's really nothing like Super Mario World, other than the fact that it has Yoshi and it has Mario. And I'm pretty sure it didn't have that subtitle connection in Japan.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a standalone thing. But that did kind of throw a lot of people for a loop.
I think it did. And the art style is kind of childish as well. So I think that might have also...
Well, it is.
I don't know.
But it's also really cool. Oh, it's really unique. It has a very, very innovative look that I think holds up pretty darn well all these years later. Just sort of that animated crayon look to it. I think that's one of my favorite things about it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
What else do you like about it?
The mechanic where you're swallowing enemies, collecting eggs, and then you can use those as projectiles. I think that, and you can use those to collect things without having to jump and collect things. I think that's just really, really novel. And I think the amount of puzzle solving around that is actually what makes it really fun too. You kind of, how do I get over there? How do I do this or that? And you can use that mechanic to reach higher.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the cool things about it. There have been a lot of Yoshi games since then, but I think that the original, Yoshi's Island, is still the best one. I mean, Yarn Yoshi, I think, comes fairly close, but still, I gotta give it up for the original Yoshi's Island in this case.
Yeah. One more thing I wanted to say is the whole, you know, you don't, it's not quite a life meter, but having Mario knocked off your back and you have to collect him before the timer ticks down and he's just crying. Mm-hmm. That Mario crying haunts my dreams. That's a very tense moment when you lose Mario and you're like, oh, gotta get him back. So,
yeah, I guess that, that method of, you know, taking damage and losing Mario was pretty unique, but it was also probably the most annoying thing about the game was having to put up with that crying baby sound effect when you'd have to go catch him. But that was, you know, probably as much as anything a big motivating factor in you wanting to save baby Mario just so he would shut the heck up. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on to my number 9, I am going with ActRaiser.
Oh, all right. ActRaiser.
Half action, half razor. No.
half to build a town.
Yeah, half a town simulation god game
and
half side-scrolling action game. It was really, really innovative at the time, and it still is really innovative now. There's really not much else like it. It's kind of a weird combination when you think about it, just some sword-swinging, side-scrolling action platformy stuff. And it's like, okay, now here's a top-down game where you show the direction of the city and you're using, you know, elemental powers to melt snow or... you know, you cause an earthquake to reshape the land. Yeah. And it sounds weird, but it's really, really cool. And it works really well. The two, you know, parts really mesh together because it almost adds like an RPG element. Because when you're doing the exploration god mode stuff, you can be like, oh, I found a new spell that I can take into battle. Oh, I, you know, raise my hit points because I have more followers. And, you know, the things just really work together excellently. Plus it had some really, really good music, an amazing soundtrack.
The music is really what sold me on it. I mean, wow. It sounded like an orchestra. The beginning just gives me chills. When you just turn the game on with the horns and the something that might turn people off, and I love this game. This is one of my favorite SNES games, not to give away my list here. Something that might turn people off, you're in the game, you're treated like a god, you have followers, they pray to you. It's a little bizarre. You just have to get past that and be okay with that weirdness where they're, you know, praying.
Never bothered me.
Yeah, and then the other thing, and this is
fiction.
Such a minor gripe, but I feel like the replayability is hurt because the city building portion is basically on, I don't want to say it's on rails, but there's only, you know, there's one way to max out your town, and you know, you ultimately every time you replay the sim part of the game, it plays out in the very same way. There's
I suppose that's
not
true,
a ton of random stuff happening.
But it's kind of the same with the action segments. You know, those are always the same every time, but they're still very enjoyable.
They are.
And I would say that both the action parts and the simulation part, and the simulation parts also have action. You know, you're
they
just
do.
This little naked cherub, you know, shooting arrows
and
at the enemy. So
and burning,
while you're
and,
guiding the
and by the way,
things.
Burning down your own village so that you can build nicer houses.
yes. Everyone who's played ActRaiser has done that. Don't feel good about wiping out my population because I need those extra followers.
Sometimes
but, you
got
to
burn it down to build it up.
I'm not really that kind-hearted a god, I guess.
No. The side-scrolling platforming looks beautiful. The music's incredible.
Yuzo Koshiro. I didn't get to say his name before.
Is that who it is?
You cut
me
off, but Yuzo Koshiro. Yeah. One of my favorite, you know, composers of the 16-bit era. He's awesome. And that's who did the soundtrack for this. It's phenomenal.
And I want to say it's also not as hard as a lot of other games on the system. So it's actually
a
game
difficulty level.
You can reasonably finish this. The boss battles aren't instant death. And there are safe places to hide. So once you figure those out, you can pretty much, you know, defeat any boss.
I will say one thing about it. At the very end of the game, you have to go through a boss gauntlet where you defeat the previous six bosses, I think, and then you take on the final boss. And the way that I met one of my best friends was that we sort of bonded over this game. And I mentioned the story on the podcast before, but he was getting the system for his birthday, I think. But we would go over to his house after school before his parents came home. We would, you know, sneak it out of the closet and play it. And he'd been doing that with ActRaiser, but he just couldn't get through this last area. So he invited me over. He's like, okay, Chris, you've got to come over here and beat this for me. And so I did that and, you know, fought my way through the boss gauntlet and was able to conquer the game for him. So it's still hard for some people, but, you know, I think most can handle it.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to our next one then. What is your number eight?
Number eight, I have Street Fighter II. What is that first one? What's it called?
The World Warrior?
The World Warrior, which is such a bizarre subtitle for this.
That was the original name of the arcade, and that was what the name continued to be on the Super NES.
All right.
So, yeah, it's an excellent choice. You know, I already mentioned Super Street Fighter 2, but I can understand why you would go with the groundbreaking original Street Fighter 2. Yeah.
So playing this in the arcade a ton back in the day, and then...
Yeah, I mean, this was a phenomenon back in the early 90s.
People would just line up. There would be a line 10 people deep waiting to play this game.
Totally.
And there were... I thought, you know, playing this, you think there's no way that this is going to come to a home console. And then when there was a rumor that, oh my gosh, it could be on the SNES, you're thinking, how could they possibly port this arcade game to the SNES and maintain any of this? It just seemed impossible. Anyway, buying this game and playing it and realizing, oh my gosh, they really, really did it. They figured it out. They cracked the nut.
It wasn't arcade perfect. It wasn't, but it was close enough.
Oh man, it was so good. So
yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple by today's standards. Yeah. But you look back then, and just having, you know, these eight diverse playable characters, these four diverse bosses, you know, all these different moves. You didn't really have games with special moves like that. I mean, this is basically the game that put the fighting genre on the map.
Yeah. I want to say that
it was an amazing port.
The reason I picked the World Warrior version is it's basically it was the arcade version that I played. And once Turbo came out, it became so much more difficult to be good at this game when you don't have really good reflexes like I do.
I can understand that.
So I prefer the quote-unquote slow version of this game, and I'm okay with not having as many playable characters. I think the only big drawback of this version is there are like four characters you can't play as, even though the CPU can use them to
Oh, right, the four bosses.
Yeah, the four bosses. So it's unfortunate that you can't play
Vega,
as them.
And Sagat, and M. Bison.
And there were rumors that, oh, yeah, they're unlockable with some sort of code or something, but I think you needed a Game Genie to be able to play as those characters.
Well, that's true. You could do it using a Game Genie, but you weren't really playing as the characters. Like, they were kind of janky and glitchy, and they were like, you know, you were actually using another character as that character, so you were doing, like, you know, the motions to play as Chun-Li, but somehow it was, you know, using the boss animation. So it was a really janky way to do it. The only real way to play as the bosses on Super Nintendo is to get Street Fighter 2 Turbo or Super Street Fighter 2. But that doesn't change the fact that, you know, it was an amazing, groundbreaking game. And it's probably one of the biggest reasons why the Super NES ended up overtaking the Genesis.
Yeah, the Genesis version of Street Fighter 2 is not good.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. It was a miracle they were able to make that game.
Here's the only reason why I think it's not good. The standard,
but it came out a whole year later. The reason it's not good, because it took an extra year to come out, while the Super Nintendo had, you know, its exclusive console version for an entire year.
Well, that and the standard Genesis controller only has three buttons. They released a controller with six buttons for the Genesis that you could play Street Fighter with.
Right.
But, you know, playing it with three buttons is weak.
Yeah. You absolutely can't do it that way. That's a very good point. Yeah, if you just have the default controller, the Genesis version is kind of unplayable. Plus, it had terrible sound.
So, Street Fighter 2, Virtual Console, yes, on the Wii U?
Yeah, it's on Wii U. It's on the Wii, and it's not on new 3DS. But Street Fighter 2 Turbo and Super Street Fighter 2 just came out. So for now, you'll have to settle for one of those. I guess just the last thing I wanted to say about Street Fighter 2 is those warping floors. You know, the way that the perspective switches as you're walking along the floor. It's kind of a minor thing you might not even think about. But the fact they're able to do that and include that in the home version of the game and not just have the static floors was super amazing.
Yep, I agree.
So just one more reason to love Street Fighter II on the Super NES. Moving to my number 8 game, I'm going with Final Fight.
Oh, Final Fight. All right.
Yeah, you know, we talked about Final Fight fairly recently. I've mentioned that Mike Hagar, the mayor of Metro City, who needs to go out there and clean up crime by literally beating up all the bad guys in his town, is one of my favorite characters. And yeah, this is the game that he's from, Final Fight. It was pretty close to being a launch title on the Super Nintendo. It was an arcade game before that. And, you know, I just love it. I can't get enough of it. In fact, I was just playing it on the 3DS Virtual Console a couple days ago. It's just got all the little nuances that make the difference between an okay beat-em-up and a great beat-em-up. Mm-hmm. Just the variety of the enemies, the variety in your attacks, and especially the way you're able to combo from your punches into a grapple move. Not to mention Hagar's fantastic jumping pile driver. Mm-hmm. Just made it really, really fun. I mean, I have to admit, it did not have everything of the arcade game. It didn't have co-op mode. It was missing a character. It was missing a level. So I could see how people might have some issues with it. But despite those problems, I think it was a really great game, really fun to play. And if you like beat-em-ups, still holds up very well even
it
today.
It does, it does. The sprites in this game were ginormous, weren't they? At least compared to
most. At the
most,
time, that's
what
it seemed like, yeah. I mean, compared to something like Double Dragon on the NES, or compared to Streets of Rage on the Genesis, which is another amazing beat-em-up. Yeah, the characters just seemed really massive, but not too big. It's not like, you know, they were screen-filling like, you know, some gimmicky games at the time had. They were a very good size. Mm-hmm.
And then as an adult, I realized this is what Japan thinks America's like. with whips and chains and motorcycles and weird beefy dudes,
whips or
suspenders,
chains or motorcycles in this game. I don't know what you're talking about.
There's a pipe, isn't there? Can you pick up a pipe and wield it?
Oh yeah, definitely. There's a pipe. There's a sword. There's a knife. And there are big burly guys that look like Andre the Giant around every corner.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think this was very heavily influenced by like American wrestling and American music. You know, there are enemies named Slash and Axel. Mm-hmm. You know, and Hagar, this character that I'm so fond of, is inspired, I think, by
Sergeant Slaughter.
No, not Sergeant Slaughter. Well, that would be awesome. No, he's inspired by Freddie Mercury, at least as far as
space really?
Goes.
Oh, really? Weird.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that is bizarre.
Yeah, that's where he got his sweet mustache from. So yeah. Final Fight.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Did the enemies have a health meter as they came up on?
Yes,
they did. Yeah.
Yes, they did. Which a lot of beat 'em ups did not have at the time. Yeah. So that was kind of a nice touch. Yeah, the follow-ups, which were not based on the arcade games, Final Fight 2, Final Fight 3, they were nowhere near as good, but the original, still a classic. Okay, what's next? What's number 7?
I put Mega Man X at number 7.
Mega Man X.
I do love Mega Man. I don't love these Mega Mans as much as I love my NES Mega Mans, but dang, these Mega Man X games are great. Yeah, so they actually had a good compelling story. Not that I can't really say that about the NES Mega Man games. Yeah, these really feel like grown-up versions of those Mega Man games. It feels like the logical progression. You've got your charge, you've got this slide move, you have a wall jump. Mega Man's what do you call his regular blaster? Mega Man's regular blaster is far more formidable in this game than it had been in games past. I know that this game is one of your favorite, so we'll save the rest for, I think, for when you talk about it. But I like this game.
I don't top five
love Mega Man X, but I top 10 love Mega Man X.
Yeah, it's a really cool game. It's a beautiful progression improvement over the NES titles. And certainly I think that the original Mega Man X is the best of the three that were released on Super Nintendo. Spoiler, it will be on my list shortly.
Okay.
Instead, I will jump to my number 7, which is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 4, Turtles in Time. We talked about this one a bit last week because that was on your list. And at the time, I talked about all the cool additions that they had over the arcade game, the new levels, the new bosses. Just a really beautiful game and really fun to play in co-op. But since I did talk about so much then, let me ask you, who was your favorite character to play as?
Donatello, but I think that's got to be everybody's, right?
You know, for this one, it was not. Donatello was my favorite to play in the original Turtles arcade game and the NES port as well. But for this one, I think I would often go with Michelangelo.
Okay.
Because they, I mean, the Turtles all played pretty much the same, but they did have these different special attacks that drained your health.
Yeah.
And Donatello did sort of this, this kick move.
Oh, I thought he did the spin with the bow, with the staff.
Not in this one. He would sort of place the bow on the ground and then like do a kick forward, you know, sort of launching himself with the bow staff.
Okay.
And it was just a little bit on the slow side for me, whereas Michelangelo would just do this really quick leap with the nunchucks and, you know, throw them both out to the side and leap forward at the same time. And it's just that difference in the special moves that I think made Michelangelo my favorite in this game. I think Leo did just a standing spin attack. Maybe that's what you're thinking of.
I haven't played this game in a while, to be fair.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years for me because, you know, it's not on Virtual Console or anything. But anytime, man, anytime you want, let me know. We'll do some two-player action, whip out the old Super Nintendo.
Do you have this game as a co-op at your house?
Oh, of course.
You do. You have the cart in addition to the arcade machine.
You better believe it. I actually do own the arcade board for this, yes. But I think that the, you know, the Super NES version is better. So that would be the one that I would play.
Totally. Impressive.
On to number six. What's your pick?
Number six. I have Star Fox. Star Fox, which isn't not necessarily what people, how can I say this without being mean to the game?
let me tell you, I didn't put Star Fox on even my top 25.
Wow. So. Okay. Well, there you go. I think for some, it just amounts to something of a tech demo because, you know, drawing polygons in 3D space with an SNES is probably like the wackiest thing you could do. I don't think as a kid.
Yeah, it was very unexpected. Yeah,
and I know as a kid, I wasn't bothered by the frame rate of the game, which is about 10 frames a second. I would say for Star Fox, if you put aside that it's basically a tech demo and it's a on-rails shooter, it is a super...
I don't know if it's a tech demo, but it's an amazing technical achievement.
It is an amazing technical achievement, exactly.
And this is the one that introduced the Super FX chip, by the way.
And I love this game. I just played the heck out of it. So I can see how it does not necessarily hold up to today. I think if kids played this today, they'd say, this game is broken. Super slowdown. It's just, you know, the frame rate's ridiculous even without the slowdown. And if stuff gets wacky on the screen, it slows down a lot. So to almost be unplayable. So I do love this game. I love the series. I think Star Fox is just a really cool, late in the SNES's life game. Came out, I think, in the last couple years of the SNES's life. I don't quite
remember. I think it was just 90. I'm going to say 93.
Oh, really? Okay. So not that, I guess not that late. So yeah, Star Fox and the digitized voices were actually decent in this, I thought anyway. Even though in
but
hindsight,
it didn't have digitized voices for all the characters.
No, just,
mostly it just had, you know, that little babble sound effect. So, you know, you'd see them talking on the screen and they just went, and Slippy had a, Slippy had that really deep voice. Exactly. And then later on, of course, he became, you know, Mr. High Pitch Froggy Dude. Back then he had a super deep croaky frog voice.
This is before I had a computer, and the 3D graphics really blew me away. I think it was doing stuff that even home computers at the time couldn't do. So I feel like this game really was pushing the limits of what consoles were capable of then.
Yeah, it's kind of true.
And in the arcade at that time, there were games that did similar stuff to Star Fox with polygons, and they also had really awful frame rates.
Yeah, like hard driving.
So, and stunt driving and stun runner. Anyway, so Star Fox. I think it's a great game. I think it deserves to be in anyone's top 10. I understand when it's not, though, because it really didn't quite stand the test of time, but man, at the time, it was a really, really great game.
I'm not going to knock Star Fox. It just wasn't my kind of game. I really wanted my sprites back then, but I do not blame you for having it on there. And certainly, you know, it did help usher in the era of polygonal gaming. It did give us the Super FX chip, and there are a lot of reasons why it deserves to be a high-ranking game. Mm-hmm. And I do wish that they would find a way to bring it back on Virtual Console.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the feeling that they just can't do the Super FX chip with 100% accuracy, and that's why they're not doing it. But come on, it can't be that hard to, you know, emulate that technology more than 20 years later. So come on, get it together.
Yeah,
Nintendo.
they need to figure this out.
Give us the original Star Fox again. Choppy frame rate and all. Well, jumping over to my number 6 game is a game that, you know, I think maybe considered by a lot of people to be number 1. And I'm going with Super Metroid.
Oh, wow. I expected this to be higher up on your list.
Well, I certainly could see it that way. You know, some days maybe I would consider maybe my number 3, number 4 game on the system, but I'm going with number 6. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that, you know, it's bad in any way, shape, or form. I mean, everything that's in my top 10 list I would consider to be among my favorite games of all time. But, you know, Super Metroid is exquisitely done. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, probably the best example of the exploration-driven side-scrolling genre.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the one that set the standard. I mean, the original Metroid, sure, it was good. Metroid 2, okay, whatever. But, you know, this one came in and, you know, everyone was just blown away. Just, you know, it perfected the atmosphere, it perfected the exploration, it added in a map. And it was just so much fun to explore this, you know, creepy, quiet sci-fi world. And, you know, ultimately get your brain sucked out by evil parasitic entities.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just so, so, so darn good. And I wish they would continue to make more classic 2D style Metroid games like this.
I agree. I think fans would just lose their minds if they went back to the Metroid universe and gave us another side-scrolling adventure.
Yep, totally. But for now, we can be content with this one. We can go back and play it on all the virtual consoles on 3DS and Wii U and Wii, and, you know, relive the battle against the giant, you know, multi-level screen-filling Kraid, and you know, going through that creepy wrecked ship without the power, and then restoring the power, and then, you know, everything comes to life. Just had so many great moments, so many great weapons, so much fun stuff. But let's move on to the next one. What do you have for number 5?
I have Super Mario Kart. And I might also understand if this doesn't go on some people's top 10 list, but I think it's the first Mario Kart, and it's really it's such fun as a two-player competitive game. I don't necessarily know if the single player holds up, but man, you're still going to go to college campuses and seeing guys playing this, you know, or guys and girls playing against each other competitively in Super Mario Kart. It's just raw skill. There's no real, you know, I just feel like there's no better multiplayer game on the SNES than Super Mario Kart.
Yeah, those are you know, fairly strong words.
What do you think? You would probably put TMNT as the best, or what would you say is the best co-op or multiplayer game on the system?
I don't know. I might be tempted to go with Street Fighter 2, actually.
Oh, interesting. All right.
But certainly, I see where you're coming from there. You know, personally, I find it really hard to go back to the a lot of the Mode 7 games, mm-hmm. like F-Zero and like Mario Kart. But, you know, certainly it was another game that just, you know, it created its own genre. Mm-hmm. It created a new type of racing game and, you know, created a new type of competition that involved, you know, not just driving skill, but using power-ups and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Add in a battle mode.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's a very, very groundbreaking title.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I still play it.
Do you have a favorite course or anything like that? Who's your go-to character?
I would say Rainbow Road is my favorite course, believe it or not, just because I'd gotten so good at it as a kid that I'm still good at Rainbow Road on in Super Mario Kart. So, and I think that's, I impressed my own self, but that's just a lot of wasted time as a youth. Yeah, I really, and what was the other thing you had asked?
Who was your go-to character?
Oh, I want to say I was driving a lot as either Mario or Luigi, and mostly be just because I love those characters. So,
all right, fair enough. Guess I'll go on to my number five then, and mine is the aforementioned Mega Man X.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as we talked about, it was just a great evolution of what we got with Mega Man on the NES. Set 100 years later, a little bit more mature, you know, animal-themed bosses instead of, you know, whatever you call it, man.
Mm-hmm.
And then added in those cool RPG elements, like being able to explore and find new upgrades mm-hmm. and ways to extend your health and those extra energy tanks and things of that nature. So, yeah, I mean, shouldn't surprise anybody. I mentioned on the, you know, Super NES show we did a year ago that it was one of my top five, and it certainly still is now. I guess the reason why I would say Mega Man X is on there and not X2 or X3 is just because, you know, it was the game in, you know, its purest form. They got it so good the first time out that whenever they went back for a sequel, when they did X2, X3, even X4 and, you know, other games on other systems, every time they would add something, it just felt unnecessary because they were able to do it so darn good mm-hmm. the first time out. Searching for those extra mechs, that was kind of unnecessary. Searching for Zero's body parts, well, aside from sounding really creepy when I say it, yeah, you know, that was kind of, you know, it just wasn't as fun
yeah.
when you'd have to, you know, encounter those really, you know, hard bosses in X2 that kind of threw off your rhythm. Like, oh, I wasn't expecting to fight this guy now. I'm not ready. Mm-hmm. I don't have the right weapon. Mm-hmm. Whereas the first one, you know, it stuck to a fairly simple formula, but it was still deep enough to just be amazingly fun.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you know, great graphics, great music, and it had Ryu's Hadouken in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, awesome, awesome game. And it is my number five.
All right.
Moving on to number four. What do you got?
I put ActRaiser at number four. I really loved ActRaiser, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything more I can say about it. I think I want to say is I really wish they would go back to ActRaiser as a franchise. I'd love to see another ActRaiser yeah. game. I know ActRaiser 2...
But, you know, Quintet is gone, man.
Yeah, it's... gone. You know, ActRaiser 2 was a... Just the platformer part of the game, and it was hollow. Yes. It was a hollow experience.
Yeah, it was also really, really hard to control really super difficult.
It's like, how did they mess that up? But they did. So, yeah, ActRaiser.
Plus, it had a different composer, I believe.
Oh, so. Yeah. Well, the music, again, the music. These songs are so good. I used to leave my SNES on and just listen to the music over and over and over. So, yeah. I would say,
well,
if only for the music.
I have the soundtrack. I bought, you know, a Yuzo Koshiro, you know, compilation mm-hmm. CD that came out a few years ago that has ActRaiser and Revenge of Shinobi
mm-hmm.
and the Streets of Rage games on, probably some other stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just the original versions of all these things, and they sound great. I'm yeah. very, very happy with that purchase.
So
the ActRaiser music, so good.
Yeah. If you're unfamiliar with ActRaiser, do yourself a favor. Either go pick it up. It's not on Virtual Console on the Wii U, is it? Or is it?
It's on Wii Virtual Console. So, you know, the Wii U is backwards compatible. You can
yeah.
switch to Wii Mode. You can download it on there.
Mode.
It's a little bit of a pain in the
yeah,
butt.
It is.
But, you know, it's maybe less of a pain than actually hooking up your Wii.
Yeah.
So that's probably the most convenient way to do it. But, you know, you know, I'm going to cross my fingers. It'd be nice. We got it on Wii. Maybe they can figure a way to bring it to Wii U.
Yeah, and I'd love to have it on my 3DS as well.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be very nice. That'd be very nice. Yep.
All right.
An amazing game. And one of the first games to come out of the system, really. Mm-hmm. It came out pretty darn close to launch. So holds up really, really well. I guess it's time for my number four then, huh? I'm going with Final Fantasy VI.
Oh, all right.
AKA Final Fantasy III.
Okay.
Not going to bother explaining the numbering thing, but any way you look at it, one of the best RPGs ever made. Mm-hmm. It's got a fantastic ensemble cast. It starts out with this character named Terra, who's been manipulated by the Empire, and then you sort of break free from their control, but then you bring in all these other characters. We were doing our politicians episode. We talked about Edgar, the chainsaw-wielding maniac inventor mm-hmm. king. He's one of the best ones. His brother, Sabin, who you enter these Street Fighter II-style button combinations to execute special moves. You know, there's a ninja named Shadow. There's a painter named Realm who can, you know, like, sketch her enemies to make them, come to life and actually attack other enemies. Just has this great cast, great story. The villain's one of my all-time favorites, that being Kefka, the crazy clown-looking dude. This is another one I talked extensively about last year, so I'm not going to continue going on and on about it. But yeah, I mean, it still holds up really, really well. Beautiful story. Lots and lots of fun. And this was a game that really turned me into an RPG fan.
So this game, it was also on the GBA, right? Was it on the GBA? I think it was.
Yes, there was Final Fantasy VI Advance.
Okay, Final Fantasy. And was it just the same game pretty much in a mobile form?
Essentially, it did add a couple new things. There were a few bonus dungeons, but for the most part, the same game.
And then can you get this on the Virtual Console?
Again, it's only on Wii. For some reason, okay. Square Enix has some stupid problem where they had this stuff on Wii, but so far it's not on Wii U in North America. It's out there in Japan,
yeah.
So I don't know what they're waiting for. But yeah, once again, you'll have to switch over to Wii mode. If you'll want to play all this right. One.
Or you can play it on your iPhone or your
iPad. But you don't want to do that.
Yeah, they gave the graphics a really crummy, like, I don't know, modernization. They didn't do the graphics any justice for iOS. I would avoid it there.
That's why you should stick to the Super NES or Virtual Console version if you can.
All right.
Okay, well, we're down to the top three, and I think I kind of know where we're going.
Yeah, I think we are.
What?
I'm kind of going to be surprised by one of yours, I think.
It won't be too surprising, but what's your number three? Okay. I'll bet it starts with the word super.
It does. It does start with the word super.
Wow.
It starts with super, and it ends with the Mario World.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Super Mario World.
Okay, I am surprised.
I love Super Mario World. I don't top to love Super Mario World, but I love Super Mario World.
Do I ever love Super Mario World?
Oh, my gosh. It is almost a perfect game. I want to say it's I honestly couldn't find a flaw, but
I would probably call it a perfect game.
I
got no complaints.
I got to say, this is probably the best side-scrolling Mario platformer in the whole series, and that includes all the Wii
the
and the Wii U.
Side-scrolling platformer, period.
Oh, ever. Oh, gosh. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it totally beats the pants off of New Super Mario mm-hmm. Brothers. I think it beats the pants off Sonic.
It does.
I think it beats the pants off, you know, anything, you know, come out since
then. And it still looks fresh. When you think about these like retro styled games that are modern, they're all mm-hmm. just taking pages out of the Super Mario World book. And they were and in Super Mario, you know, when they're making Super Mario World, they're dealing with the limitations of this platform. And that's why the mm-hmm. game looks like it does. But man, they pushed the limits of what the thing could do, how they can make these sprites just candy colored, beautiful. It shows what you could do with the color palette on the SNES. It basically said, this is the game that every other game that comes out on this platform is going to have to measure up to. And man, it was just a shock. It was a shock to see that. And
it really set the standard.
It was my introduction to the system in Nintendo Power. We saw pictures of this game, and it was like, how could it possibly look that good? It couldn't possibly, because it just looked like such a leap over the NES. And even, I mean, honestly, to have that game be the one of these launch titles, it's just
it was a packet that gave it away. It came with your system.
And it forced Sega to basically give away Sonic in their game, in their, because they were giving away Altered Beast. I mean, come on, what Altered Beast? And then they realized, oh my gosh,
hey, Altered Beast. I'm not gonna knock Altered Beast, but it's no Sonic. Exactly. And it's definitely no Mario.
So Sega sees Nintendo's giving away the best game on the system, and they're like, oh, I guess we got to give away our game. So they had a giveaway. And then they put this not for resale sticker on the on the Sonic game, because, you know, it was also on the shelves at the time, and they didn't want, you know, people to...
In fairness, the Super NES version didn't come in a box either, so...
Yes, that's true. That's funny that you say that. Yeah, it didn't.
But... yeah, I mean, it was one of the system's best games. It was, you know, the pack-in game. It was the launch game. There it was right at the beginning, 25 years ago, and it's still just as good now as it was then. But aside from the graphics you mentioned, I love the world design. I love the world map. I love the way that you'd be surprised by these multiple routes and the way it would sort of draw these things in to reveal some new secret. I mean... like I said, I consider it pretty much perfect. It's great in every respect. The map, the graphics, gameplay,
all. And even after you had finished the game, there was still, felt like there was a ton left, because you had skipped, you know, there's no way you had visited everything on your way to finishing the game. So there were, in some cases, there were whole worlds you could have skipped. So tons of secrets, tons of different exits to levels. Just really, really impressively good fun.
Okay, well, I'll move on to my number three, and it is Chrono Trigger.
Oh, okay. This is a game that wasn't even on my list because of my limited experience with
Chrono Trigger.
And I don't hate RPGs. I just, just don't play them.
You hate them in the 90s, and you hate them now.
Yeah, so I want to know all about what puts Chrono Trigger up so high. I have to figure out how I'm going to, how do I want to play? I know you had recommended on the GBA, but let's hear about the game first.
I told you two weeks ago.
The DS, that's right.
You should get the DS version of Amazon. You can still get it for like $20. Yeah. Bucks. If you haven't done it, you should totally do it. But why do I like it so much? Well, the whole time travel aspect is really fun. Unlike most RPGs, it has a fairly small cast, just, you know, 7 playable characters. And that makes things really manageable. And it gives you a good excuse to swap in and out characters at different times. It doesn't get overwhelming. So in that regard, it makes it sort of a good beginner's RPG. And at the same time, it looks beautiful. I mean, it was easily the best looking RPG to come out at that time. I mean, I'm used to stuff like Dragon Warrior or Final Fantasy, where they had these little squat, super deformed characters. But this was just beautifully animated. And, I mean, it was kind of hard to see that it's from the same character designer who did Dragon Ball Z when you're looking at the sprites. But, certainly in the character portraits, you could see that. And, his very innovative art style really came through and helped add a lot to the game. Plus, you know, it's pretty well known that this was sort of the dream collaboration project between Square and Enix, who were rivals at the time. They came together. Some of them did music, some of them did story, and, you know, they were just able to bring out the best in each other. You know, it's a fairly lighthearted story. It's a fairly simple story, but being able to travel to these different periods of time and, you know, in a sense, be like, okay, I'm going to save the future by, you know, going to the past or going to these other time periods. It was just a very compelling gameplay hook. It was cool to see how the world would evolve from one time period to another. And then it also led to some, cool optional side quests where you would, you know, go and do something somewhere to influence something that would happen in a later time period. Excellent soundtrack as well. One of my all-time favorite soundtracks. Yasunori Mitsuda is the guy who... primarily did that one, collaborating also with the composer of Final Fantasy. But, they worked together and just came up with an excellent excellent soundtrack. So another great thing about it is that it does not have random battles. I don't really mind random battles myself, but they're kind of frowned upon these days. And this game, which came out actually 21 years ago, we're actually just celebrating the 21st anniversary of this game. It was just 2 days ago. But yeah, it still holds up really, really well. It feels very contemporary in a lot of ways. So Scott, you should definitely play it. I think anyone who likes RPGs should play it. I love it.
Okay.
Number 3 on my list.
I'm sold. How many hours am I going to have to put into this?
It's actually not terribly long. Okay. You can probably get through it in about 25 hours or so, which, I mean, you know, it's kind of short compared to some RPGs are like, you know, 60 or 80 hours. Yeah. But these days, 25 seems like, you know, plenty for me. It seems like a perfect length for a good classic RPG. Yeah. I think that's actually another great thing about it. Okay, then. Number two.
So my game, number two game, also starts with the word super. It is Super Metroid. Super Metroid.
All right.
Yeah, for all the same reasons that you put it up so high on your list, I put it at number two. I think this game, it's just emulated constantly by other games. It just feels like when you're playing a lot of these new games, you can tell what they're borrowing from Super Metroid.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it has influenced so many games.
And it's such a huge part of the speedrunner community, which is funny. I don't speedrun games because I'm not nearly that good at games, and I don't have the time to, I don't know, play a game every day for a year to get really good at it. But I totally respect speedrunners. I know how much work it is and how much skill and talent goes into it. And I'd love to watch Super Metroid speedruns because there's just some really inventive ways of getting past certain things without collecting a certain power up. And there's, you know, memes that came out of Super Metroid that wouldn't exist without it. Killing the animals at the end or saving them and that kind of thing. So
yeah, I guess that's true.
Super Metroid, wonderful, wonderful. Couldn't possibly say enough stuff about it. Just did all the right things, and I feel like it's
groundbreaking,
one
innovative,
of the most
beautiful,
perfect games. You can play it on your 3DS. You can play it on your Wii U. You can play it on
Wii.
I guess you can play it on your Wii.
Do you have a favorite part of the game?
Yeah, what opens the game up is the speed running mechanic where you're using it to speed running on my brain. The dashing mechanic, because you're not just using it to barrel through barriers, you're using it to get across areas that would otherwise dissolve under your feet before you can get past. And you actually have to speed boost, basically using that mechanic to get to areas you otherwise wouldn't be able to reach. So you're jumping through that dash maneuver. There's no tutorial in this game. You have to figure it out. And the instruction booklet doesn't really tell you that much either. It also had
It's true. You might even realize you have a run button at first until you get to that part. You're like, how come I can't get through? They're like, oh, I haven't used this button at all. Now it makes
sense. And they graciously gave us a map in the game, which was huge.
Yes.
Well,
that was the thing that made a huge, vast improvement over the original Metroids.
So. And, you know, going back and retreading old areas, but with a new ability, makes it feel like, oh, I've never been here before, even though you had. So, yeah, it's super cool that they figured out ways for you to go back, make the game feel fresh the whole way through, and, you know, you're revisiting old places and they're fresh. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Super Metroid.
All right. Well, I guess we should move on to my number two then. And guess what? It's Super Mario World.
Okay.
Which we already talked about extensively.
We did.
And it's, you know, as I've already said, it is my favorite 2D platformer ever. Mm-hmm. All-time classic. No need to harp on anymore. So let's just move on to number one.
Okay, I think this is... So we did not make this list together, but I think if you made your own list at home, if this game is not...
Have you been keeping track? Have you been keeping
you
score?
You kind of know what this game is.
You're probably going to know what it is. We both came up with, as you were saying, the number one game separately from each other.
That's right.
And it is Bubsy in Claws Encounters of the Furred Kind. And I made that same joke last year. I made that same stupid joke last year.
I love it. I love it again. It's Daffy Duck, The Marvin Missions, which, by the way, I wanted to put one of those Warner Brothers games on my list, and I picked Roadrunner Death Valley Rally. But I really did love Daffy Duck, The Marvin Missions as well. So if you haven't played that, pick that up. But that was not the game we picked at number one here.
That's right. It's The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past.
That's right.
Of course.
Of course. It's probably one of the most beloved games of all time. It is considered by many to be the best game ever made, sounds really hyperbolic and like over the top, but it's hard for me.
For me, that's probably true.
It's hard for me to name a video game that's better than that. And to say that is kind of scary. So why? Why this game made in the mid-90s? Why can't we make a better game than this, Chris Hoffman?
Well, I mean, I think nostalgia factors in heavily to it, but the reason why people like it so much is because it really, you know, demonstrated what the Super Nintendo was all about, which was taking something that was already good and making it way, way, way better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas Zelda 2 went off the rails and did its own thing, this went back to what made Zelda 1 so beloved.
Mm-hmm.
But they did it with a far more complex game world where there were towns and people to actually talk to.
Yeah.
And there was a lot more of a storyline. And, you know, the graphics looked way, way, way better. There were a lot more abilities. There were a lot more secrets. You know, obviously it sounded way better too. You know, because it had four buttons, it was way easier to use items and do different things.
Yeah.
And just, you know, the dungeon design was superb. Really, really good dungeon design. Plus, there were, boy, how many dungeons were in that game? You know, like 12 all told. I think there were 8 in the dark world, 3 in the light world, and then the first one, if you count that as a dungeon. Mm-hmm. So it just had, you know, a lot to it. And then one of the things that I like about it, and the reason why I think it's my favorite Zelda game, is because I just thought it had an impeccable balance between puzzles and combat.
Yeah.
I feel a lot harder to get that balance right when you're talking about a 3D game world because you can only see sort of, you know, what's in your viewing area. When you're doing it from a top-down perspective, you know, there can be, you know, attacks going on that really, you know, are coming from behind or coming from below or coming from above, and you can easily react to that. So you can take a quick break from what you're doing with the puzzle solving and then focus on the combat and then go right back to that puzzle solving element, where it's really hard to do that in 3D. If they do try that, it usually doesn't work and you just get frustrated, but it works really, really well. And I think that is kind of the one, you know, little, almost intangible difference that makes this better than most of the other games in the Zelda series, in my opinion. I know a lot of other people would obviously say Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
Some might say, you know, the original because it did everything first. But for me, I think that's what makes it just so darn good. Oh, not to mention, it was the first one that introduced this dual worlds play mechanic, which, I mean, I don't know if any other game had done that, but for me, it was the first time I'd encountered anything like that. And it just seemed so cool. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I've gone through, you know, this world, I've explored so much stuff, and now I've got a whole alternate dark version to go through. And that just seemed so awesome to me. And of course, the mechanic that went with it, of, you know, bouncing back to the light world from the dark world to get to new areas, it was all just so brilliant.
I agree. And it's a big reason why I've loved A Link Between Worlds. So if you haven't played, okay, I'm going to imagine you haven't played Link to the Past. And if you want a small taste of this without going back into the catalog, pick up A Link Between Worlds on the 3DS. Wow, it's just, there are some issues with it that's, you know, I completely understand, but it's a modern version of A Link to the Past, and I have no issues with it.
I think they're both brilliant. I think anybody who likes video games should definitely play both. Play A Link to the Past, play A Link Between Worlds. They are both fantastic games. I'm kind of curious, do you have any favorite moments in this game?
Favorite moments?
Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past.
I think, favorite moment is walking through the misty woods there and those forest creatures.
Oh, yeah, the Lost Woods.
Kind of the Lost Woods and the forest creatures kind of scurrying about in that layer of fog, and you're going to get the Master Sword. I think
that's
just one of the most memorable moments in gaming for me.
Absolutely. That would be right up there for me.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite moment? Is that, did I just pick it for you?
That probably is my favorite moment, but I also, you know, from a gameplay perspective, I really like the part where you're fighting the boss called Argus. Mm-hmm. That's where you have the hook shot and you're pulling off these weird
spheres. And you have to hit those spheres. Pulling off his balls. You click the ball off his balls. You have to hit the ball.
And you hack them up. But to me, that's always been such a classic and fun boss fight. I mentioned before that how much I love the hook shot. And so, you know, I just love that part from a gameplay perspective. Yeah, but there's a lot of magic moments. There's a lot of really good ones.
I agree. And so what I want to know what systems you've played and finished this game on, Chris.
That's a good question. I've definitely done it on the original Super Nintendo many times. I've done it on Wii. Have I actually gone through all the way on Wii U? I'm not sure. I definitely did it on GBA. There was a great GBA port. Now, as far as the 3DS one goes, I just finished the third to last dungeon last
night. Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh. So you're quite still finished that you're yet. Still playing this game. Awesome. Oh, yeah. I love that.
That was how I celebrated the 25th anniversary of the Super NES, was playing me some Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past.
That's so
and
great.
Really, there's no better way to celebrate.
Yeah, I really feel like I could play any of these games in my top 10 list tonight and not be bored within 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I think that says something.
Yep, I completely agree. That's why it's one of the best systems ever made. Well, this episode has gone on a lot longer than I was expecting, so I suppose we had better wrap it up and call it a show. But before we go, there's still time for a dramatic reading. This time from a Super NES game that did not quite make our top 25, Saturday Night Slam Masters. Get ready to bust some heads. It's Saturday night, and the Slam Masters have arrived. 10 of the biggest and beefiest wrestlers ever to step into the ring have gathered for one bone-crushing, back-breaking tournament where there are no rules. Step into the ring and get ready for no-holds-barred wrestling as you bounce your opponents off the ropes and clothesline the fools. Or dare them to take the fight outside the ring where brawls with tables, chairs, and bottles are all part of the action. And just when you think you've got enough muscle, grab a multiplayer adapter and try out the 4-player Battle Royal, where only the Ultimate Slam Master will survive. Features 10 unique wrestlers, each with their own special attack, like Hagar's Spinning Pile Driver and Rasta's Dreadlock Drop. 1 or 2 player simultaneous action. 4-player action with a multiplayer adapter sold separately. 24 megs of hard-hitting action.
24 megs. So did you play this game as a kid? Because
I own this one. This one's pretty good, actually.
It's a Capcom game, and honestly, this is the first time I'm hearing of this game.
Yep, it's from Capcom. It is a wrestling game, and the guy I keep bringing up, Mike Hagar from Final Fight, was one of the playable characters in here. So it was a fun arcade wrestling game.
It's a shame because I think games like this deserve a spot in the virtual console space, and they don't come to virtual console, and it feels like it would just be a no-brainer. Just give me
I'd love to see it come back.
Just give me all the games. I'll decide which ones I want to pay for. It's not like there's a license on any of these characters that Capcom couldn't just say, you know. It just feels kind of arbitrary.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in the back catalog that could stand to come back on Virtual Console. We keep getting the same ones over and over. I mean, I certainly don't mind always getting the Final Fights and the Street Fighters, but why not give us Slam Masters or Knights of the Round or Captain Commando?
Oh yeah, Knights of the Round. Yeah. That's a great game.
That'd be great.
All right.
Yeah, they might not be top 25, but they're still great games.
Yeah.
Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at powerprospod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Scott at Plastic Bugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you feel like it, you could give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella.
Our listeners rock, by the way.
And our financial advisor, Simon Greedwell.
Marry me with my money.
We will see you next time.